The song is called Canaan Bound, the music from Andrew Peterson. At 8.5 minutes after the hour, it's a Tuesday morning, and we have on the line none other than Dr. Don Clark. He's our resident biochemist. He's a member of the Board of Creation Moments. And Don, we haven't heard from you in a while. Will I recognize your voice? Let's see.
Well, I've been around.
Oh, yeah.
You're the one who has been. No. Okay. Mitochondrial DNA. Plants don't have mitochondria, you know, per se. Mitochondria, or the often referred to in your biology class, is the powerhouse of the cell, because it's responsible for actually generating a compound called ATP, which is adenosine triphosphate, that's like the chemical activator for all of the chemical reactions in your body. In your cells. So but the mitochondria, now here's the interesting thing about the mitochondrial DNA versus your nuclear DNA, which is, you know, in the center of your cell. The mitochondria are floating out, not floating, but they're in the cellular matrix outside of the nucleus. Now, the mitochondrial DNA, the mitochondria, not just the DNA, but the whole mitochondria, comes from the mother and not from the father. The father contributes the second half, if you will, of the DNA that goes into the nucleus. The mother does too, but the mother also provides the cell, if you will, to start life. So it's like you've got a little cell, and it's got all the machinery, it's got all the enzymes, it's got all of the stuff that you need for that cell to grow, but it's missing half of its DNA. We know that, you know, of course, the DNA is a double helix, which means that it's got two pairs of DNA, when a egg is formed, it only has one of the two pairs, and then of course when the sperm interacts with that particular egg, then it enters the egg and enters that cell ready, you know, which is ready to divide. So as soon as the DNA gets into the nucleus, the sperm or the DNA from the sperm gets into the nucleus of the cell, then the cell starts cell division at that point. But the egg has all the machinery. So it's interesting because I think there was a new Jurassic Park movie that came out, you know, not too long ago. And there's a problem with that because you need, they say that, oh, we used frog eggs in order to, you know, generate all of these dinosaurs. And so there was an egg, but you do need the machinery, if you will, of a cell in order to make another cell, in this case, make another human being.
Yeah, that was a part of Michael Crichton's book, and that was in the first movie, that they had most of the DNA, but there was chunks had been knocked out or had decayed over time. So they took, you know, some frog DNA and kind of patched it in. I don't know that they use specific pieces.
Well, that's how you would get leaping lizards, isn't it?
With teeth.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I've often wondered, does that make scientific sense?
No, it doesn't make scientific sense. Okay. So it was a good attempt to try and do, you know, say how they made all of these different types of dinosaurs. But, you know, you need more, for example, you need more of the animal than just its DNA. Which is the whole point I'm trying to say, is that, you know, the mother, for example, with the egg provides all of the machinery in the cell. So it's not like when you have, you know, at the point of conception, you just have two DNA molecules getting together. From there, you know, starts life. You need the all of the enzymes, you know, DNA cyclase, for example, that actually unwinds the DNA in order to, you know, start the replication process. And, of course, you need an energy source, which is where the mitochondria comes from and why the, you need mitochondria in order to, you know, to start that process.
So,
well.
So we could say that it's the female's DNA that rules the roost.
Not necessarily.
I was going to say how like life that is.
It's not the DNA. It's the it's all of the other stuff in
the
cell.
Okay, I gotcha.
Alrighty. Yeah, so it's all of the other stuff. You know, it's like, let's see, you can have, for example, well, let's use the you can have a disc that has a video on it. But that video is not going to do, that disc is not going to do you very much good unless you have a Blu-ray or a DVD player and, you know, the associated monitor and all this other stuff to make it go. So you can look at the egg as all of the other stuff to make it go.
Okay, well, we're kind of wending our way toward an article here posted in the Institute for Creation Research by Brian Thomas. And it's entitled DNA Trends Confirm Noah's Family. And it has to do with mitochondrial DNA. And that's the part that's traced from mother to mother to mother to mother. And it stuns me that they can graph something from this. Explain the graphing, the chart, and what that means, what it tells.
Well, they look for similarities, for example, between the you know, the DNA, the mitochondrial DNA. So, again, the mitochondria itself has DNA because it also replicates as the cells divide and stuff. So you need more mitochondria. So it's got to divide, but it's different from the nuclear DNA, which we normally think of as kind of the information source for the person. Mm-hmm. Well, the mitochondrial DNA also gets passed on, from progeny to progeny, and from generation to generation. But as it gets passed on, of course, there's mutations that occur, and so you can track the similarities in the mitochondrial DNA, or in this case the differences, and then you can make a plot as to how similar or different the DNA is, and then from there you might be able to draw some conclusions okay, this race of people, for example, came from this other race of people, or these two races of people seem to be similar, or they're completely, you know, different from one another. Mm-hmm. And so that's in a kind of a graphic format. That's kind of what's going on.
By the way, I'm looking at such a chart, and if you'd like to see it too, you can click the link in our chat window there. It'll take you to the same article at the ICR website, and you can see a picture of this graph, and it's a very short article. It's technical, but it's a short one, and it tells us some stunning stuff here. Explain the essence of the article, Don.
Well, it's actually very poignant article, and it kind of answers a lot of questions verifies what the Genesis record tells us. Mm-hmm. For example, here's the experiment. Dr. Nathaniel Jensen plotted hundreds of human mitochondrial DNA, and we talked about what that was and how that's different from the nuclear DNA. Mm-hmm. And they plotted it on this difference diagram. And lo and behold, as these differences kind of coalesce, if you will, they will, depending on the number of different ancestries, form one, you know, will coalesce into 1 point or 2 points or 3 points or 5 points if there were five mothers that started this whole thing off. Mm-hmm. Well, what they found was, there are three. So Three Moms kind of started all of this, all of the differences in the personages, you know, around the world, around the globe. And so you go back and say, why three? You know, why not one?
No, just to clarify, so all of us, all the human beings on the face of the earth through all the generations could be traced back to its origins with one of three different mothers.
That's correct. So if, for example, if evolution were true, then that should be one. Everybody should be, you know, should be,
yeah,
should point back to one mom out of the primordial soup, you know, and the becoming a monkey and a whatever, an ape, and then the ape, you know, eventually turned into a man somehow. From that one woman, man-woman, came all of the human race.
Mm-hmm.
That's not what was found. Why someone hasn't done this before, is really mind-boggling, because it's a very, now that we have all of this DNA data in databases, you can do these types of plotting and experiments, and then come up and see what your answer is. Well, here they came up and says, well, there's three. Well, if you go back to Genesis, of course, we know that there were eight people who went into the flood. There was Noah and his wife, and then Shem, Ham, and Japheth, and their wives. So there were three wives, and all of us are descendants of either Shem, Ham, or Japheth. So we should expect then, post-flood, that we would all originate from three different mothers. So that data corroborates, for example, exactly what's in the Bible. Now, they went one step further and said, well, we know, for example, that the maximum number of mutations per given time period is this. And so let's see how many differences. So that should give us a maximum number of differences, for example, between these three original moms, for example. And so if you assume that the genealogy in the Bible is correct, and you assume that, well, you know, to the flood, it was about 1,600 years thereabouts, then you should have eight differences between these three moms. And that's exactly what they found.
That's one mutation per generation.
Not necessarily one mutation per generation, but one mutation per certain number of years.
Ah, okay.
And so they found eight, and that's what you would expect for the time between let's say the start of creation, if you will, Adam and Eve,
mm-hmm.
till Noah, the Noah's flood, and then post flood. So that's what they found. And then they went one step even further and said, well, it looks like, if we take the biblical history as being accurate, then we know it's been about 4,400 years. Since the flood. And so we should have, for example, about 115 mutations in the mitochondrial DNA to the most, different DNA in our little plot here, till now.
Mm-hmm.
And so they went ahead and did that, and they found the number of differences, and it was it was 115. So actually, well, you have to add the 8 to it from, you know, before. So that would give you 123. And so what they found was it was 123.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't thousands, as you would anticipate, or hundreds of thousands if, you know, there's this millions and millions of years of man's genealogy. But it was 123, which corroborates exactly with a young Earth creation model that you would interpret or you know basically calculate from the genealogies that's in Genesis.
This is really stunning information. But and so I'm going to challenge you with a question: how would an evolutionist read this article, and at what points would they challenge? Do you think? I mean, this looks like a pretty solid argument.
Yeah, well, I mean, even if you challenge the assumptions, so what are the assumptions? The assumptions are that there's X number of mutations, you know, per year or per time period.
Mm-hmm.
So you could challenge that. Well, but that's not an empirically measured, it's a measured value. you know, it's of course, it's an average value, but... It is a logical value. So that's challenging that doesn't really get you very much. I mean, mm-hmm. You can say, well, okay, instead of 8, maybe there's 10. Or at least, you know, or maybe there's 6.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that buys you, you know, some years, either forward or backward. But it doesn't, you know, it's not going to get you to the hundreds of thousands of years. that you're looking for from an evolutionary point of view. The other thing that they could challenge you on, I mean, the authors suggested that an average age for a young lady, you know, giving birth would be 15 years of age. Mm-hmm. Now, today we would consider 15 years maybe a little young, but, you know, back then, of course, you know, that was in our past history, that is not an unacceptable age. Matter of fact, it's probably, in sometimes it might be a little old.
Mary, they figure, was between 12 and 14, probably.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the young lady is of age to have children for certain, certainly. Mm-hmm. And so it's a conservative number. It's a reasonable number. But if you, you know, if you change that age, then you have different number of genealogies. I mean, different number of progeny or different generations, number of generations for the same time period. But you're dealing with, instead of maybe 4,400 years, it might have been 5,000 years, or it might have been 4,000 years. So you're not dealing with, you know, big time time frame differences, and you need, again, you know, thousands of years. So that's not going to do it for you. So, you know, on the basis of what these folks have done, everything is reasonable. And of course, you can't get an exact, number, but the numbers are quite reasonable. And even if you fudge them a little bit, you're still in the same general ballpark for a creation model, and you're way off from an evolutionary model.
And this little chart is rather stunning if you accept it as valid, and the article is convincing that it is valid. Three distinct points, they point them out there, that represent the changes between the three original mothers of the human race, that is, post-flood. Interesting stuff. It's, again, an article at the Institute of Creation Research. And take you 5 or 10 minutes to read, and you'll chomp on this all day. This is interesting evidence that Genesis is exactly what it says it is. It's a history, and it's factual, and it's true. And it's accurate, and I think you'll find this a neat article to read. The link, again, is in our chat window now at BrokenRoadRadio.com. Well, Dr. Don, good conversation, and I think we learned some things about DNA. And I'd already known that in order to really trace ancestry, you need the mother's DNA to do that. And so that's the mitochondrial thing that you've explained to us rather neatly. And so we're all a step ahead of the game as of this conversation. So thank you very much. Appreciate it.
You're quite welcome. It's been fun as usual.
Mm. And Don, a member of the board of Creation Moments, creationmoments.com is their website. And at Creation Moments, at the website, you will find volumes of information, scientific analysis and findings that supports young earth creationism. And regardless of your beliefs, if you're seriously interested in the topic, you owe it to yourself to peruse that website and take a look at this material and see how it affects or doesn't affect your thinking. It's information that's begging to be known. It does not get wide dissemination in this culture, which is so heavily kind of reflexively on the side of evolution. There's another argument, and it's scientifically supported. And so, again, if this is of interest to you, if you care whether it's creationism or evolution, then you need to take a look at that creationmoments.com website. You can link to it from ours at Broken Road Radio.